much. I'm going to present a model as well. It wouldn't approach the level of sophistication, I think, of an IBM model for epidemiology, perhaps, but this model just the same for engaging the private sector in developing country programs. Largely, we've done this, implemented this model in conjunction in partnership with USAID. We call it full market impact. It's our version, AED's version of what also is an approach that's gaining increasing currency in our field called the total market approach, if you like. In a sense, it's an evolution of social marketing approaches, which I'll speak about here in a moment. But just a word on AED, founded in 1961. We have programs throughout the domestic United States in public health areas as well as education, as name would apply. I work with the Global Health Population Nutrition Group, which is, and I'm with a center, a sub-center, if you like, of that group called the Center for Private Sector Health Initiatives, and we are implementing programs in developing countries in Africa, Latin America, and Asia, largely, and AID is a primary partner. I think I'll start here with a depiction of the socioeconomic pyramid as it's represented in many developing countries. Where in health markets in developing countries, the commercial sector largely is crowded into this sort of the apex of the pyramid, serving the A and B segments of the market, wherein it's really the public sector which ostensibly is mandated to serve the poorest of the poor to ensure that they have access to needed public health products and services. But as research has shown over time and over the years is that, in effect, the public sector is serving everybody. That we've seen surveys that have shown that up to 50% of the people who are accessing free or near free public health services are, in fact, the so-called rich, those who have the ability to access those same products and services offered to the commercial sector. Another player in this market are the so-called the social marketing organizations, or SMOs, and NGOs, who also have generally subsidized products, near free products and services, and to serve the C&D segments of that market. But generally speaking, if anything, their behavior tends to mirror that of the public sector. I'd like to speak a bit about our engagement with the private sector really has its origin in social marketing and what we call a traditional social marketing approach. This came into being about over 30 years ago. USAID was a pioneer in this area of working with, generally speaking, NGOs and the like who would get the USAID or another donor would provide commodities or provide the funds for commodities, products, if you like, condoms, contraceptives, and the like, and would essentially subsidize the supply side. These products would then be moved by this implementing organization through the commercial retail sector, and people would be able to access very highly subsidized products for various public health programs. Population was an early area for this, HIV/AIDS with condoms and the like. These have been very successful programs. Sales have been tremendous. People have been able to gain access to these highly subsidized products and services, and they have done much to impact public health. The problem with these programs, however, is that you are in effect creating a donor-dependent market system. So in a sense, social marketing came in to address market failure, wherein the commercial sector essentially was not providing these products and services to those who needed them, but in a sense you're also creating the prospect for market failure as well. As these programs get larger, the donors have to sustain these programs with increasing funds as they grow larger, and at the same time there's no incentive for the private sector, the private commercial sector if you like, to invest in these public health areas. And the problem is what happens when the money runs out? What happens when a global pandemic comes, an avian influenza, if you like, and donor interest shifts from, say, population programs, HIV/AIDS, or another program and has to address another health emergency? I used, in a sense, these programs have become monopolies. I depict, show a monopolist here, John D. Rockefeller, who's also a great philanthropist, who just had a comment on how the benefits of charity are there, but they also can be rather injurious if you don't have a sustainability strategy. What we're essentially, this is a bit of an inside joke, if you like, to show the evolution of the traditional social marketing approach to what we call full market impact or a total market approach, where we attempt to redraw the social socioeconomic pyramid and the participants in a program, where in the public sector, what we're attempting to do is to have the public sector segment the market so that they are, in effect, serving the poorest of the poor, using their limited resources to provide access to those who really do need free or near free products and services. There can be a continued role for the social marketing organizations, NGOs, in reaching those markets that really cannot be efficiently reached by the commercial sector. But essentially, our real objective here is to encourage the commercial sector and to create incentives to the commercial sector to reach down to the base of the pyramid. And the base of the pyramid, I think, is BOP, if you like, is gaining some increasing attention by the commercial sector. Multinationals such as Unilever, Hindustan Unilever in India, SC Johnson, and others have written strategy documents, are implementing programs. They understand that the vast untapped markets are in the developing world and those who traditionally have been ignored markets. And certainly the commercial sector in developing countries understand very well that their real market potential, their business potential, is in serving the bulk of the market that's down at that base of the pyramid. I depict here the model, like for the full market impact approach for private public-private partnership, and showing the two roles of the key partners in this, the private and the public. The private sector is traditionally concerned with its the four P's of the marketing mix, the product, price, place, promotion, which we're well familiar with, and that equates from the public sector agenda of supply, affordable supplies, distribution, and demand, and behavior change. So we understand the objective of the private sector is to create sustainable markets, or rather return on their investment. We're not talking necessarily about corporate social responsibility here, but engagement of the private sector so that they do get a return on their investment in a public health program, where at the same time the public sector is interested in equity and ensuring that the poor do indeed have access. This blue arrow here represents the role of facilitator of this approach, AED or a like organization, where we see our role as coordinating the partnership between the private and the public to engage in capacity building and quality assurance, particularly with respect to our private sector partners, to share market research with our private sector partners so they're aware of the opportunity, providing distribution and support, marketing funds where needed to help them reach that base of the pyramid, financing policy or advocacy efforts to create an enabling environment for private sector investment, using demand creation programs, but largely generic demand creation programs to promote the whole categories that all participants in the market can benefit from the promotion, or using matching funds, using GDA principles of using donor resources matched with the resources of private sector partners to create incentives for investment in programs, and targeted subsidies and vouchers programs, which I'll talk a bit about later, referenced here in India, where these voucher programs, we've been pioneering that approach in Africa as well through our NetMark, Insecticide Treated Net project. Overall, of course, our goal is to achieve sustainable public health impact by engaging the participation of the private sector. We're implementing this approach in a variety of programs. These would include our NetMark project, which is being implemented in about 7 African countries currently. It's an insecticide-treated net project. I'll speak briefly on that. We have a private sector program contract with USAID, for which we have 3 task orders, one in Tanzania called T-Mark, another in Nepal called N-Mark, and a point-of-use water disinfection and zinc treatment project called PUZIN, for short. As well as a family planning project, a reproductive health project in Ukraine. Briefly on NetMark, the objective of this project is to build viable commercial markets for insecticide-treated nets that reach that base of the pyramid in a range of African countries. I mentioned there's 7 here: Ethiopia, Ghana, Mali, Nigeria, and others. And as you use a joint risk, joint investment strategy building on the GDA principles that speak about a little bit of our highlights here, we've engaged 40 partners in this effort. This includes multinationals, insecticide manufacturers, net manufacturers abroad, as well as local African ITN manufacturers and partners. And the investment that they put into this program, over $53 million in private investment, that's $1.37 for every USA dollar invested, a bit on equity in that we were able to, pioneer some voucher programs with funding from Exxon. And the idea here is where we distributed vouchers through antenatal clinics to pregnant women. This is targeted groups, a voucher to pregnant women or mothers of children under 5, which enabled them to enact, with that voucher, they could get a net of their choice through retail outlets. Exxon, in fact, some of their gas stations participated in this effort as well. Talk a bit about T-Mark, moving quickly, because I think we have 15 minutes left in the session, so I think I have to make this quick. Our key partner there is Shelly's Pharmaceuticals, a subsidiary of a large East African conglomerate. Shelly's has invested over $100,000 in marketing subsidized condoms and pills. They've also launched their own malaria product, ORS and zinc, with its own investment. And even with the subsidized brands, the idea is that they're going to take ownership of these brands as they graduate from USAID support and sustain their involvement in public health. In NMARC, we're working with the commercial sector in condom programs where we, again, using matching funds. It's the principle of using matching funds to match them dollar for dollar and investing in efforts, marketing efforts targeted at high-risk groups or most at-risk populations for HIV/AIDS along transport routes and in key urban areas in Nepal. We received 15 expressions of interest from commercial partners in response to an EOI that we distributed, and on the basis of that, we eventually selected 3 partners who are participating in this program. I think I'll just close there, and we'll just invite the panel questions.
Thank you. Thanks to the panel. I think it was excellent. I certainly learned a lot, and I hope you all found it as interesting as I did. And let's just open it up for questions because we got started a bit late. So any question, and please direct it to any member of the panel, or if you have a general question, also please.
I think that the market segmentation can be a difficult approach to implement, and I think that as long as the public sector is getting the resources, I think it's only in a constrained environment where they might be more willing to participate and understand that they have to better target their resources. I will say probably one of the better examples of of the government recognizing the role that they could play in targeting their subsidies and working with the private sector might be in Tanzania, where there's the Tanzania National Voucher Scheme, wherein they are where the voucher programs that we've done in other countries have been on a smaller scale to demonstrate the efficacy of that approach, but there in Tanzania it's gone national, and the private and the public sector has in fact gotten out of the net distribution business and understand that that they can work with the private sector to supply the market with nets, and that the subsidies can come in the form of the voucher through the public sector. So that's probably one of the best examples we have now of a national public-private partnership in a public health program. But it's you know, it can be difficult, to be sure, to get the public sector to really more efficiently target its resources.
The situation is a little different from that. I think the private services are being paid for out of pocket, and India already has a very high level of out of pocket spending. About 75% of the total national health expenditure is out of pocket spending. I always shock people in India when I say that that's much, much higher than the United States, you know, which they view as the sort of the paragon of the private health sector. The dilemma is not so much that this is crowding out government spending, because the government is trying to increase its spending in a sense that, if you think about the logic of the strategy, it's in a sense to try to substitute for this demand for private services through offering what are ostensibly free public services. But the quality of the public services is often not very good. So despite the availability of free services, people are still using the private services. So this really raises a question of whether purely increasing the public budget is going to be the successful means for doing this. And that's why I think today people are starting to think about other kinds of financing strategies, like health insurance or other ways that would organize public funding and private funding together into some kind of a pooled fund, which would be purchasing services, and that government could subsidize that for the poor. So there are some interesting new ideas, but as of where things are today, I think that the problem is not increasing private expenditure. The problem is what to do about the already, I think, by any equity standard, too large out-of-pocket expenditure that somehow needs to be rechanneled.
And remember that what they're doing actually in India is the government is participating in something that gets vouchers to the poor to get health care they wouldn't get, but the voucher is used at a private establishment. And they have an agreement with the private establishment of how much they can get for this voucher. So it's a really very clever idea, because the public settings are often inferior in terms of what they provide. So they get something as good as a rich person could get who could pay for it, and yet the government actually helps pay for it with their public monies.
There's really almost no multinational health service delivery in India. The service delivery is being done by Indian providers working for Indian organizations. Even the large private corporate hospitals are Indian companies. So there isn't this kind of multinational delivery of healthcare at all. So it's not that they're going to go anywhere. In fact, where they're going is they're actually expanding overseas and also trying to bring patients into the corporate hospital, trying to bring foreign patients into India through what people are calling medical tourism these days. So it's not that the providers are going to go anywhere. It's more a question of trying to balance. I think the need for public financing to support the health needs of the poor is clear and widely accepted. The real challenge is whether that public financing is going to be challenged to public sector delivery institutions or whether it might purchase more and better health care if it was channeled to non-government health care delivery institutions. And in part, the answer to that question, through things like vouchers and so on, depends on, whether the government can make its owned and operated healthcare delivery institutions work well, or whether it might be more efficient to purchase through things like vouchers and so on healthcare from an already existing capacity in the non-government sector.
I think to your point, a partnership is about gives and gets, right? And each organization, in order to feel like it's a success, needs to feel like they are giving something of value and getting something in return. You know, and that's why the example I used that said, you know, there are times when you make an investment some way, you know, by providing resource on a project, and it may not turn out to be something that's replicable, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now in other places. But you do see the benefit that that particular organization or company or government or institution yielded from it. You know, maybe your goals in that partnership didn't come out the way you had hoped, but that happens in business all the time as well. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't approach organizations to see if there's an opportunity to partner and bring their resources to bear. You know, I think that if everybody looks at it from the perspective of how can I provide value, what value can that organization provide, how can it help, and considering where there is an opportunity for it to expand to other places, just increases the opportunity for that private corporation, right, to help a public health organization get started with their project and potentially work with others.
You know, there are two reasons that a private company, for-profit company, might get involved in some of these health activities. One is they really might put a percentage of the profits aside, just like any private foundation, set it up. It just tries to do as much good as it can. But there's also very pragmatic, personal reasons why it's in their best interest to do some of this. In a lot of these places in the world, in Africa, for example, the workforce is decimated by both HIV and malaria. So if you're losing one out of four workers to one of these things, you know, it costs you a lot of money in retraining people, losing people, figuring out what to do, and it doesn't take very long to figure out, you know, if the health of our workers was better, it might be a very prudent investment. So sometimes it's, you know, that's a good case to make to anybody and to governments as well, that who don't put very much money into health. They put it into defense or buying weapons. And we try to sometimes make the case to them, you know, you've got so many of your people dying and sick, and the burden on the country is tremendous. If you did a higher percentage of your monies on health, your workforce would be healthier, your economic growth would go up. I mean, countries and companies and, frankly, nonprofits are very, we all think alike. We have to have, as was said here, you need to feel like there's some reason for you to be engaged. And you're usually strongest if you make both humanitarian arguments and you make very practical arguments. They're not incompatible. You know, it's fascinating. There's been some research that shows that people seem to be wired, hardwired in their psyche in such a way that they are healthier when they are involved in cooperative ventures that appear to be altruistic. Now, why in the world would that be the case? But that's what some of the empirical evidence suggests. If people who are generous and don't spend so much time being selfish, they actually live longer and happier. I mean, there are, so is it selfish that they're selfless? I mean, we need to get better at making the arguments to get the right outcome. And we can sometimes do better than, we can probably make better arguments than we sometimes do.
I think we have time for about one more question. Any
Well, thank you all for coming, and a special thanks to every member of the panel.